You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Mohammed Harkat was arrested in 2002 and held under security certificate. He spent 43 months in jail without ever being charged and was held in solitary confinement for the first year. When first released in June 2006, he had the strictest bail conditions in Canadian history. 3 weeks from now, Mohammed Harkat will be in the Supreme Court of Canada for the second time in 7 years to challenge the constitutionality of security certificates, Canada's secret trials in which no charges are laid and the detained and their lawyers have no access to the evidence. When the Supreme Court of Canada meets for the trial October 11th, it will be in a secret location, and the proceedings and discussions will not be open to public scrutiny or witness. Matthew Behrens is a freelance writer and social justice advocate who coordinates the Homes Not Bombs Nonviolent Direct Action Network, and he joins me on the line. Hello, Matthew.
Hi, Mordecai.
How does Harkat's upcoming trial differ from a regular Supreme Court trial in Canada?
Well, normally when you go to the Supreme Court, you walk into the building, you can see the nine judges sitting there, and you hear the case that's being argued, both by the government and by the defense. And in this situation, on Thursday, October the 10th, you're going to be able to see a public hearing, but then on the 11th, the justices are going to disappear somewhere. We don't know where. Somewhere in Ottawa in a secure bunker, and just like happened in the days of the Inquisition of old, the days of the burning chambers, there's going to be a secret hearing, and Mr. Harkat won't be there, and none of us will know exactly what is going on. And this is quite a dangerous precedent that's being set, that the Supreme Court of Canada is holding a secret hearing.
So the judges don't have to follow any standard rules of evidence. They could base their decision on information, even if it's would be inadmissible in an open court hearing.
That's correct. Under the security certificate regime, which is part of the immigration system, first and foremost, it's a two-tier system. So if, for example, you were a Canadian citizen and there were allegations made about you with respect to national security, you would have the right to be charged criminally and to be brought before a court where the charges against you would have to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. And as you pointed out in your introduction, Mr. Harkat and the others subject to security certificates do not face that same standard. So they face, in fact, the lowest standard of any court in Canada, which is the reasonable grounds to believe that it's possible that someone may be associated with something in the past, present, or future. So it's an incredibly broad and vague standard. And then, as you also point out, a judge may base their decision on admitting something that's not normally admissible in a court of law. So essentially, judges are now sitting in on sessions that are not technically courts of law because the regular rules do not apply.
Now, straighten me out on this, if you would, please. The secret trial regimen was declared unconstitutional, I understood, by the Supreme Court of Canada in 2007, I think it was, in the Sharkawi case.
That's correct.
So why is Harkat still facing a secret process?
That's a really good question. Essentially, what happened in 2007 is the Supreme Court of Canada unanimously declared security certificates unconstitutional, and it came down to a simple question. How do you meet a case that you cannot know? And so what they did was they kicked it back to Parliament and said, come back with something else. Unfortunately, under the Harper minority government, with the collaboration of the Liberals, they passed new legislation, which was essentially the old legislation, but with some changes. One of the most significant changes was the introduction of something called the special advocate regime, in which security cleared lawyers could go in and represent Mr. Harkat's interests. However, there's all kinds of problems with that because Mr. Harkat is still no closer to knowing what is involved in the secret case. And even behind closed doors, and this is part of the appeal that's being heard in October, the special advocate's hands are still tied because in the Harkat case, there were a number of secret informants that the special advocates were not allowed to cross-examine because the judge said to allow this to take place in secrecy could harm national security and harm the interests of the individuals who are the secret informants as well. So it's still a very problematic, fundamentally flawed process. And, it doesn't answer the original finding of the Supreme Court of Canada. How does one meet the case that one cannot know?
Some lawyers have refused the status of a special clearance to participate in this process simply because they regard it as a charade.
Well, I think it to a certain degree the whole process is a charade, and the problem is not, I think, with the lawyers who are the special advocates, because the special advocates that currently are working within the system are some of the top lawyers in the country, and I don't believe that they would be doing this if they didn't think that they could at least be, you know, fighting the good fight. The problem is, however, that we don't know what the nature of that fight is at this point in time, and the scarier part of it is the fact that this is just the thin edge of the wedge. You know, for the past 12 years in our campaign against secret trials, we've been saying it's not just these so-called limited cases. The government often says, oh, we only do this three or four times here or five or six times there. Secrecy is becoming a hallmark of Canadian government process as well as judicial processes. So, for example, at the Immigration and Refugee Board since 2008 and these revisions under the Immigration Act, there's been over 100 secret instances in which secret information has been introduced against individuals who are here trying to seek the protection of Canada's refugee system. And that's being put into place under a system that isn't even run by judges, just in front of the tribunal, the Immigration and Refugee Board.
And is this affecting jurisprudence in terms of decisions that then have some kind of status in and of themselves?
Well, of course. I think increasingly what we're seeing is we're seeing decisions in which governments are being allowed to claim national security confidentiality, and every time that happens, that presents more case law that bulks up their case later on. So we've seen that a lot in the United States, and we're continuing to see that here as well. So the real concern now is that we've got a parallel system of secret justice in which a very select group of people gets to go behind closed doors, make arguments. They might be the best arguments in the world, and, you know, someone might win. But it's horrible to know that, you know, after 10 years of being accused of being a threat to national security, a judge comes out and says, you know what, you're not a threat to national security, but we can't release the reasons why. So that cloud will always hang over your head. And this is the problem with the process. You need a free and open and honest and transparent process, not only for the individual affected, but for society at large. Justice needs to be seen to be done in order for justice to be done.
Is there any case where a judge has refused or stood down in terms of participating in this kind of increasing demand for secret trials?
Well, we have had a number of judges express their discomfort with the process, and there was a famous instance about 10 years ago when a federal court judge, James Hugeson, actually said, you know, it makes us feel like a fig leaf. We're very uncomfortable with the process. But, you know, to be perfectly honest, that's not good enough. I'm sure there might have been judges who were very uncomfortable with sentencing Rosa Parks to jail under the segregation laws of Alabama or Mississippi in the American South, or Martin Luther King Jr., but ultimately, you know, judges have a role in society, and their role is not simply to say, yes, here's a law that says Jews are not allowed to participate in this activity or Muslims are not allowed to do this. Eventually, you have to say that's not right. And just as the German judges or the Chilean judges under the dictatorship of Pinochet were complicit in human rights abuses I very much think that Canadian judges have to look at their own role in terms of not only indefinite detention based on secret information, but also deportation to torture. These are all serious issues, and I think, unfortunately, the Canadian judiciary is largely complicit in the human rights abuses that have taken place, especially over the last dozen years.
What would you say is the overall effect of this lack of openness, transparency in the justice system on something that professes to be a democratic system, professes to respect the rule of law?
Well, there was a judge in a Detroit case about 10 years ago when John Ashcroft was the Attorney General in the United States, and his conclusion was very simple. Democracies die behind closed doors, and whether it's in the courts, whether it's in seeking access to information about whether a corporation up the road is dumping toxins into our air and our water, and we're not allowed to get that information, we're seeing an erosion of the basic core concepts of democracy, especially transparency, and we're also seeing the ruination of a lot of lives of people who are vulnerable to begin with, who come here to this country seeking refugee protection, and then become targeted by the government's intelligence agencies. So a lot of people in the Arab and Muslim communities, people who are Tamils, people who are Sikhs, a lot of folks are being affected by what is a 1-2 punch. On the one hand, they are being tarred and feathered in the media, and then on the other, secret things are being said about them, and they have no recourse other than to say, you know what, it's secret. But we know how this works. A lot of people say, well, you know what, they wouldn't be going after them unless there was something to the allegations. So still, to this day, the courts continue to show great deference to CSIS and the RCMP, even after these agencies have been found by the government's own inquiries to be complicit in torture, to exaggerate allegations, to bend the truth, and to outright lie and trade in torture.
Well, it's process that needs massive amount of popular resistance, and thank you for the work that you're doing in that regard as well, and for the time you've taken to speak with us this morning.
I greatly appreciate it, and if anyone is interested, on the 11th, we're inviting people to participate in a day of shame. Go down to your local courthouse, hang your head in shame, and say no more secret trials in Canada.
Thanks for adding that and letting us know.
Thank you, Markay.
I've been speaking with Matthew Behrens. He's a freelance writer, social justice advocate. He coordinates the Homes Not Bombs Nonviolent Direct Action Network. And for more information on Mohammed Harkat's case, go to justiceforharkat.com.